Christina mentioned the Honduras team is gone. This is my mug that I got when we went 4 years ago, so I always drink from it the week that the team is gone. I'm both happy and sad that they're gone, though, because without Steve being here, from when I'm preaching, I don't know who's going to be the brunt of my jokes. So I need a volunteer. Mike. Mike was the first hand. Thank you very much. So we are in the Ethos series still, and it's each month we focus on a different part of our ethos, who we are, rediscovering who we are as Imago. And so we are apprentices. Corey talked about a facet last week, and so I'm going to take another pass at that. So we are apprentices of Jesus, on a lifelong journey of following him, learning from his example, becoming more like him. He's the master, we are the apprentice. And I know some of you probably had this come to mind, but Mike, not that kind. You knew I was going to say that, didn't you, Mike? No? You're fired! See? Now you know why I needed Mike. And I love the hands image that Becky chose for this month. It's just like the younger hands on top, that they feel like they're softer, they're more innocent, they don't know what's going on, but there's this posture of openness and resting against the stronger, more weathered hands at the bottom. I think that really speaks to our apprenticeship with Jesus, that sometimes we're not even aware that he's holding us, you know, and how much we're learning from him. We're right there in hopefully trying to be in sync with him. Apprentice is a relational term. If we wanted to just say we're not skilled, we would say novice. That speaks to skill, but apprentice, by definition, means that there is someone we're engaged in a relationship with. And I love that it's a relational orientation. And so how you view that relationship matters. What do you think about that space between us as apprentices and Jesus or God as the master? And some people seek out, some apprentices will seek out their master. I think most of my life, Jesus seeks out me. He's the one who initiates. He's the one who makes catalyst for any growth in my life. And so I think that image speaks to that as well. And here was a verse I thought kind of spoke to this dynamic from Henry Nouwen. He says, "I'm beginning now to see how radically the character of my spiritual journey will change when I no longer think of God as hiding out and making it as difficult as possible for me to find him, but instead as the one who is looking for me while I am doing the hiding." I think that speaks to me. But what does this relationship look like? Well, I think John 15 is a passage that came to mind, the metaphor of the vine and the branches. So I'm going to read that for you all. So this is from The Voice, so it's more fluid. And I don't know what page it's on, but because it's a different translation, I guess just follow along on the screens. "I am the true vine, and my Father is the keeper of the vineyard. My Father examines every branch in me and cuts away those who do not bear fruit. He leaves those bearing fruit and carefully prunes them so that they will bear more fruit. Already you are clean because you have heard my voice. Abide in me and I will abide in you. A branch cannot bear fruit if it is disconnected from the vine, and neither will you if you are not connected to me. I am the vine and you are the branches. If you abide in me and I in you, you will bear great fruit. Without me, you will accomplish nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is like a branch that is tossed out and shrivels up, and is later gathered to be tossed into the fire to burn. If you abide in me and my voice abides in you, anything you ask will come to pass for you. Your abundant growth and your faithfulness as my followers will bring glory to the Father. I have loved you as the Father has loved me. Abide in my love. Follow my example in obeying the Father's commandments and receiving his love. If you obey my commandments, you will stay in my love. I want you to know the delight I experience, to find ultimate satisfaction, which is why I am telling you all of this. My commandment to you is this: love others as I have loved you. There is no greater way to love than to give your life for your friends. You celebrate our friendship if you obey this command. I don't call you servants any longer. Servants don't know what the master is doing, but I have told you everything the Father has said to me. I call you friends. You did not choose me. I chose you, and I orchestrated all of this so that you would be sent out and bear great and perpetual fruit. As you do this, anything you ask the Father in my name will be done. This is my command to you. Love one another. There's a couple times it said, abide in me. Another way that that's phrased is to remain in me, or make your home in me, or be joined with me, to abide in me. So the disciples knew how to love others and follow that commandment because they witnessed it firsthand. They experienced Jesus' love toward them, and so that was their apprenticeship relationship flowing there. That he modeled it for them, he showed them how to love others in front of them, he explained and taught them about it. And we are invited into that kind of relationship as well, to be both recipients and ambassadors of that love. And I like how it said, I chose you. I feel like that, for me, that is so often the case. So a couple of things to point about that, about this relationship, that we are connected to the vine. We are in relationship with the vine as his branches, to kind of pick apart this metaphor a little bit. That we're not in control, that we experience life because of that connection. We're not the experts. We are not self-sufficient. We will shrivel away if we're not connected to him. I think that's a humble reminder for me. A good window into the reality that sometimes we forget, and our culture tells us we're independent, we're self-sufficient. We don't need anybody. Secondly, we are connected to the vine. The God of the universe, as our creator and sustainer and master teacher, that we learn how to love from the embodiment of love. And to me, that feels like an honor and a privilege, but also a very weighty responsibility. Thirdly, we are connected to the vine. See what I'm doing there? Lynn's taking notes. She knows that she's a good teacher right there. That it's already happening, and I find that encouraging, that God took the first step. We are already connected to him. His life is already flowing through us. And he's moving in our lives even when we're not aware. So it's as simple as that, right, Mike? Easy peasy. We just don't fall off the vine and there it is. No, this is a little bit more difficult to actually put into place, to grow in love, to be an apprentice of Jesus. So how can we bear great fruit? It's not like the disciples had it, where they were there in person, watching him love other people, being loved with him, you know, face to face. You know, it's not like we're like, hey, Jesus, why did you stop and talk to that Samaritan woman? Also, could you pass the lamb? You know, sitting at the dinner table. I wish it was like that. And Jesus is like, yes, I will, Peter, but only if you promise to not stop telling the little children to bug off. Let the little children come to me. Did you get that, Mike? Yeah, okay. I've only got 4 more references to you in the notes, so yeah. So, following Jesus in our shoes is both easy in a way because we're already connected, but it's also extremely difficult. And it's more nuanced. But the end goal is the same. And that bearing great fruit, it looks like love. So Sister Ilea DeLeo said, when love transforms our actions in a way that Christ is represented or represented, then we become mothers, sisters, and brothers of Christ. This birthing of Christ in the life of the believer is a way of conceiving, birthing, and bringing Christ into the world in such a way that the incarnation is renewed. It is making the gospel alive. We're his apprentices, his ambassadors of that love. That we sang a song about, putting on Christ like a new skin. We're trying on his skin, and it doesn't always fit, but we're trying it on. Christian actually means little Christs. That's sometimes, it's supposed to mean that, at least. It doesn't always mean that. And Jesus is still leading us, even though it's more indirect, to become more like him and to grow in his love. But that apprenticeship takes on all different shapes and forms. That I believe God works in all things. And it's through prayer and spiritual practices, yes, that apprenticeship works, that a relationship is built. But that God also speaks to us through our feelings and through our desires and through our experiences. And most importantly for me is through relationships. That there is God in each of us. So as we interact with each other, the Christ in you helps the Christ in me grow. And I think we can help each other. So it's pretty neat that in relationships that it is the proving ground to test our love, because if you're just by yourself, it's easy to think you're great at loving. But when you're around other people, that's really where the test comes. But also to grow in love, that it's also the fertile soil where love can be grow more. So, if God leads us and grows us in a variety of ways, through relationships and feelings and desires and experiences, how do we notice God's nudging and those subtle invitations to grow? We're following him symbolically. How do we notice where to go? How do we find that his movement in our life? Mike?
Sometimes it's not so subtle.
Let's hear about it.
Leaving the church we were at before. That was very not subtle. But it was clearly time to go.
But you felt like he was directing you there. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you. That was supposed to be, what kind of question is that?
Rhetorical.
Yeah. But that was great. I love that. So it is hard, but sometimes it's easy. Most of the time I think it's hard. I do feel like it gets easier over time. What do you guys think? To notice his nudging. Like if you get better at paying attention, it's almost a skill of noticing. And it's interesting because I'm going to share a few ways that have been helpful to me, but we each have a unique relationship with God. We're each uniquely created, and I believe he relates to us individually because he's a relational being. So it's like that journey is yours alone to kind of navigate. And so that makes it tricky that you can't just find a big manual. Even if it was large, I'm sure we would all read it because it'd be like amazing. But it's like there is no manual. So it's like you kind of have to test things out and find what are the pathways that fit you. So here are my values, some ones that came to mind, some guiding principles for the journey. And so I came up with four. Well, I had seven. Christina helped me whittle it down to four. So the first one is to make room. This is something that I think has been crucial for me. To make room, first of all, in your schedule. To simplify in order to have necessary margin. If you are constantly running and if you never take any time to stop and pause, you're not going to notice what God might be speaking, both directly or indirectly. And so it's like you have to stop and pause. So there has to be actually a priority of noticing in order to say, no, I'm not going to pack my schedule out to the max. In order to make room to have that motivation to say, I'm going to protect this because there is a priority for noticing what God's movement, for reflection. So the other way that I thought of to make room is to make room in your heart. Maybe it's if you don't have any room for a new or a deeper relationship, then that could be a missed opportunity. If God sends someone across your path and you are maxed out, then you're going to miss out on that relationship. So one way that Christine and I do this occasionally is we kind of take a life assessment. A lot of times around the beginning of the year, around January, and we'll kind of sit down and just say, like, what's going well? Where do we need to grow? What's strong? What can we prune? What can we trade? And relationships are one of those things that we always assess and say, like, hey, what relationships do we want to invest in? Do we want to just try out? And maybe it's some that we want to go deeper, or maybe it's some it's like, you know, I find that person really interesting. I'd love to talk to them more. Let's set some goals and say, like, I'm going to try to, over the net, you know, once a month, reach out to this one person. And that could be an idea. because I think that making room could also have the nuance of stretching your capacity for relationship. Maybe it isn't a specific relationship, but maybe you become more friendly, or maybe you just think about your relationships more, and you stretch your ability to relate to others. So that's one aspect of making room. The other is to be curious. So make room and be curious. So this comes a little bit more naturally for me. Some people aren't as curious. I've kind of kept that childhood curiosity my whole life, and I don't mind being odd like that, I guess. This is probably not new information to you all. But ask lots of questions. Whether you are in a conversation with someone, whether you are in a conversation with yourself, whether you're learning about something new, just ask lots of questions. Let your curiosity lead you, because I think, for me, God has spoken through that curiosity, and I've gone places, especially as you think of an apprenticeship, you don't have the skills or expertise. You don't know what you don't know. It's a process of learning. So if you have that posture of openness and curiosity, that it kind of comes with the territory of, well, I don't have a plan because I'm not the one in control, so let's see where this goes. So how might God be speaking in this or that? You know, almost like, think of life as like a mystery or an investigation or a quest. Where might this lead? Should I lean in more? Can I experiment a bit and see what happens if I just invest a touch of energy here and see what happens and then tweak it? You know, keep that curiosity. Maybe there's a person that you find really intriguing, and you're like, I'd like to know more about them, and sit with them and ask them questions. Or maybe there's a book or a conversation or an idea that just is sticking with you, and you can't quite shake it. Maybe God is working in that. Maybe that is rising to the surface for a reason. So hold that and follow your curiosity. I was trying to think of an example of this, and something that came to mind recently is that I was asked to be on the Homeless Continuum of Care Governing Board. And I did not set out to be asked to join the Homeless Continuum of Care Governing Board. And I was glad Stephen is here, because Stephen actually helped make that happen. So Stephen works for the United Way, and when I was serving at Breakfast Club a few years ago, and just feeling like, I had this lingering question, like, why do I keep seeing some of the same people week after week? It breaks my heart. Like, it feels like people don't want to be homeless. Where's the gap between desire and need being filled? Both in our city, in our county, you know, nationwide, where I just wanted to learn more. So I sought out to learn more, and I set up a few meetings with people around town. Stephen was one of them. And I kind of got some questions answered, but then I just had kind of more questions. And so I kept following this curiosity. And so some people would then refer me to other, like, hey, you should talk to this person. And so I talked to other people that I knew that might have a good window. And one of the people that I talked to was like, my mentor is in Chicago and is the executive director of a nonprofit up there that deals with affordable housing and getting people off the street, getting people supportive services they need. You should talk with them. Here's their number. And so I was like, okay, I'll do that. So I cold called this guy, and he was like, hey, I really like that you're, you know, curious about this. You're asking questions. If you want to, you know, come up for a visit, you know, we could have coffee. You could meet some of the staff, and you know, they would be able to answer some of your questions more directly because they're like in it. I was like, okay. So then last July, I went up to Chicago for a morning with a couple other people and just learned more and just met with their staff. And Christina's like, what are you doing? What is your plan? What's your end game here? And she's more wired that way. And I'm just like, I don't know. I don't have an end goal. I thought, maybe this helps with something with the church. Maybe it's like I come back and I talk to Stephen or other people, and it's like, you know, it's like we kind of help each other, you know, just learn more. Anyway, when I did talk with Stephen, sorry I'm referencing you so much. Stephen. he does great work. He keeps quiet in this, but he does great work in the city. He told me I should talk to this guy who offices out of the United Way named Kevin Nolan. And Kevin Nolan is the chairperson or president of the Homeless Continuum of Care, which is a coalition of like 60 organizations in town. It's Tri-County area. And so it's hospitals, it's all of the shelters, it's affordable housing placements, it's mental health, it's, you know, human service center, everybody that has is in the continuum of care for helping people with homelessness. Anyway, so I talked to him and I was asking him questions, and he told me about a book that I might find interesting. So now I've read a couple books about the subject. And then he's like, you know what, you should start coming to these general membership meetings. So once a month, I've been going to the continuum meetings because they're open to the public. And there's no clergy that go. I'm like, what is the deal here? Like, I'm the only clergy person. And then I was like feeling the weight of all these caseworkers and, you know, nonprofit leaders. I'm like, maybe my place here is to like support the supporters. You know, they're on the front lines and I could support them, but I wasn't sure. Anyway, so I just hung around for like a year. And then they're like, we need 5 new board members. And will you do it? And I'm like, are you sure you want me? I don't know if I'm going to contribute anything. I have no money. He's like, oh, there, you don't have to pay any money. I'm like, okay. I'm like, he's like, you're young, you're passionate, you have the breakfast clubs, so you have a little bit of a pulse, you know. And I'm like, okay. So anyway, the thing is, I'm doing it now for like the last 6 months. I still don't know why I'm doing it. I don't know if this is like the end and all of this was building to this moment, or if this is just like the first of like 10 steps. I don't know. It's just a weird path I've been on. I just keep following my curiosity. At least it's resulted in something, something practical. It took a lot of effort. It was very non-practical for a long time. So anyway, so be curious. Also, listen. That's been a guiding principle for me. To really, really listen to people. To people in your life. To take time. To seek to understand before you're understood. And one of the listening techniques that I've learned that's been helpful is called shelving. And it's basically when you're in a conversation and you're trying to be present with that person. And it's like Lynn and I are right here, you know. And so she is sharing. I'm asking questions. I'm not trying to be the speaker. I'm trying to be the listener. But when you're the listener, you still have things that, you know, like prompts that come up. And you're like, oh, like me too. I want to say this story, or like I can relate to that, or hey, have you ever heard of this? And you take all of those thoughts that are still a part of you, and you don't want to just discount them and say, oh, delete that and fight against them. But it's easier to actually just picture that putting them on a shelf. So shelving them for the moment so that I can be present. And I found that really helpful. I think listening is so key. Even in the gospel narratives, you see Jesus being with people, being really present, sitting at the well with a Samaritan woman for hours, listening. And I think being that ambassador of love, when you're listening to someone, they feel loved. They feel like, my time is valuable. I am worthy of this person's attention. So if you're really listening to them, that's an expression, a way to love and follow in Jesus' footsteps. So listen to people in your life and listen to your life, your family, your history, your education, your dreams, your crushed dreams, all of the different parts of your life over your total existence, your talents, your passions, your personality, your friendships. I believe God moves through your story. He is in your journey, and he has been from the beginning. So listen to your story and pay attention. That's where you can notice some of God's nudging. In spiritual direction, if there's a trend that happens over years, they call that, even if it's a subtle trend, they call it a strong work of God, just noticing a thread that develops. So listen to your life. What does your story tell you about God and about yourself and about how you are relating to each other? And if we can do those two things, if we can be present to others, and if we can be present to ourselves, then we're also building skills to be present to God, both the God in the other person, God in us, and God in times of prayer and spiritual experiences. It all kind of wraps together for me. So one example that I think really made this stand out to me is that September 6th, 2002, Does anybody remember what happened that day? Yes, Christina.
We met.
We met September 6, 2002. Before that day, I did not know Christina. And then after that day, my life was changed forever, right? It's amazing, just if you think about the power of a single moment. But we're apprentices. We don't know where we're going. We don't know what the journey looks like. We don't always know where God is leading us. But if we are listening to our life, listening to the people that come across our path, then we can capitalize on those pivotal moments, those pivotal relationships. You don't know when it's coming. So it takes having your listening ears on. Sorry, that's like you say to kids, have your listening ears on. All right, the fourth one is be patient with me as your speaker. And with yourself, that following Jesus is a lifelong journey with the expectation that we will get lost and we will meander and we will have detours. We are apprentices after all. To be patient with the process, that growth in love and change and discovery are all really slow. It takes patience. And finally, be patient with your season. That there is value in every season, and there are highs and lows, and there are exciting seasons, and there are depressing seasons, and hard seasons, and there are waiting seasons, and monotonous ones. And sometimes, that's all you've got, is just the waiting. And I wonder if that's the task at hand, is just to embrace the waiting, and to be patient in that. Okay, so here's a verse that came to mind that helps me in this apprenticeship concept. Paul says, "So imitate me, watch my ways, follow my example, just as I too always seek to imitate the Anointed One." Comes from 1 Corinthians 11. So this is a little bit more flowery than the normal one. Follow me as I follow Christ, as I follow Jesus. So there are people ahead of us in the journey. And that I said earlier that God works through relationships. So it's possible you will have someone that you could follow that will lead you to Christ as well. That you know, if you feel like God is nudging you to become more generous or more joyful or more patient, you could look at the people you know and say, who's really joyful? Who's really generous? And just ask them questions. You don't have to say, hey, will you be my mentor? I'm trying to grow in my ambassador of love job right here, and I feel like you could really help me. Just start up a conversation. So for me, relationships are so, so key. And I was starting to think about how a lot of times I'm not the one even requesting those relationships. They just come across my path, and then I notice them, and then I can lean into them. But a lot of times it's just like a relationship happens, like with this beautiful lady over here. So some recent mentors or people that have come across my path, I thought of three. The first is an unexpected friendship that has taught me a lot. Through this friendship, I've learned that we all have much more in common than we are taught to think. That a lot of times we try to have very, very specific, you know, shared things. But we are all we have so much more in common than we were taught to think. Friendship doesn't require that we share the same hobbies or the same family type or the same age or socioeconomic or housing status. This friend, many of you know, is Mark. I was wondering if he was going to be here today, but I met him at Breakfast Club a few years ago when he was down on his luck, and he didn't have housing at the time. And Mark and I share a love for nature and an interest in philosophical discussions. And we also love food. We are both very routine-oriented, and we're both determined, a.k.a. stubborn. so we can match each other right there. So 4 years ago, our friendship started because he asked me if I would go for a drive in the country with him. And since high school, that has not been an activity that I've done, just go for a drive out in the country. But I'm like used to that concept, you know. And so he came to Breakfast Club. He's like, hey, let's go for a drive out in the country. And my first thought was, heck no. That sounds like a good way to be murdered, right? Then my second thought is, okay, I'll say yes, but then I'll like persuade him. Let's just go get a sandwich at Panera and just chat. And then the next time, you know, then it's like, I've gotten to know you a little bit better. I remember Christina asking, like, what are you gonna do anyway? So I tried to persuade him to go to Panera. But as I said earlier, we're both stubborn and he won out. And so we went on a drive. And it was awkward. But it was also fun. Any new thing is going to be awkward. And so that happened. But now that's a tradition of ours that we do. We go get a sandwich from Panera, and we drive out into the country. And we love it. We have a good time. So don't resist those openness to new friendships. It's also given me more compassion just because I didn't know his story, and then he came into my life, and I got to see what his life led him to be at that moment, and my life that led me to be at that moment. And his life was a lot harder than mine. Another recent mentor for me is parenting. Parenting is easy, right? As Corey said yesterday, or last week, sorry, thank you. I'm glad that date, September, happened. We seem to grow the fastest in times of difficulty and struggle. But parenting is also joy, so if you want to become a parent and you aren't yet, it's still worth it. But I've learned how to become more present to each other. I can't be as selfish now that we have four people in our house. I'm actually an introvert. I'm an outgoing introvert, so I like my alone time. But the kids have pressured me, thank you, Kaylin, to challenge me to be more sacrificial in my love. It's tested my love many times. How tenacious is this? How much am I willing to give? And I know that that's my responsibility as the parent. I've also learned that I'm not as skilled at self-control as I'd like to think. For example, where did you put your shoes? After they were on the stairs, and there were four requests to get them off the stairs, and we were looking for 10 minutes, and we're late to this thing, right? I'm only kidding. I wouldn't yell. I just said that to illustrate one of the most basic human emotions, which is anger. Another human quality that I like is creativity. Like when you take a cute washi tape and you buy a bin from Target and you put the person's name on it and you say, this is where your shoes go. And you put it in the closet right by the door. And then you coach them and you say, here, let's practice, practice, practice. And then you have to be even more creative when the shoes are not in the bin and they're also not in the other 26 places you've looked. So gotta watch out for that. Patience is another thing. So that helps me with other relationships. And our journey has also been unique because we've learned more about attachment and connection and bonding, and we've paid attention to that. And what is the fertile ground for relationships to grow and for trust to be built, which they have taught me, and now that I start to look at my other relationships through that lens. And then finally, Anabaptists. Not Baptists or anti-Baptists, just Anabaptists. It was another early Protestant branch that they refused to align their faith with the empire. Some of the Protestants were like, yeah, give us the power, let's align with the state. They were not as much that way. So Mennonites, Amish, Quaker, Peace Churches. So I did not find the Anabaptists through intellectual pursuits. I didn't hear about them really in seminary or through denominational experiences. They keep just coming across my path. Ed's a Mennonite, right? Sorry to call you out. I'm bad about this. I know too many of your stories. So some Anabaptists that came across my path. Lane Miller, he was here like 4 or 5 years ago, came to Imago, and he was in my book club. And we were talking about this book that was basically comparing the culture of Western individualism with the way of Jesus. And he had so much insight about that I just was in awe every time he talked. And I think he's even younger than me. He just had so much wisdom from the Anabaptist tradition. It's really fascinating. I don't have time to go into it all, but just the value for people and the value for community and the thoughtfulness that goes into the tradition is really impeccable. Michael Danner, who you heard speak a little bit a while ago, he's become a mentor type figure to me, also Mennonite. And in my spiritual direction training, I had to pick a spiritual director. And I was drawn to this lady named Jeannie. She is also Anabaptist. So anyway, I feel like God is tricking me. And so I don't know. So it's like I'm learning from the Anabaptists and I'm pouring into those relationships because there's a piece of me that really resonates with that. We actually are, like as Danner said, we have a lot of Anabaptist tendencies here. So those are some of the recent mentors for me. And I'm wrapping up here. What are your growth edges? Thinking back to the vine metaphor, what are your growth edges? Where do you sense maybe some light coming through on the little buds that are growing out there? Maybe I took that too far, but where might God be inviting you to take some steps? What relationships might need a little bit more energy or investment? And as you think about that, and as you discern where is God moving in your life, in your story, and where is your apprenticeship going, I wanted to read a quote about discernment, which is the word that really describes this process of becoming more aware of God's movement in our life. So I'll close with this. Christian discernment is not the same as decision making. Reaching a decision can be straightforward. We consider our goals and options. Maybe we list the pros and cons of each possible choice, and then we choose the action that meets our goal most effectively. Discernment, on the other hand, is about listening and responding to that place within us where our deepest desires align with God's desire. As discerning people, we sift through our impulses, motives, and options to discover which ones lead us closer to divine love and compassion for ourselves and other people, and which ones lead us further away. Discernment reveals new priorities, directions, and gifts from God. We come to realize that what previously seemed so important for our lives loses its power over us, loses its luster. Our desire to be successful, well-liked, and influential becomes increasingly less important as we move closer to God's heart. To our surprise, we may even experience a strange inner freedom to follow a new call or direction as previous concerns move into the background of our consciousness. We begin to see the beauty of the small and hidden life that Jesus lived in Nazareth. Most rewarding of all is the discovery that as we pray more each day, God's will, that is, God's concrete ways of loving us in our world, gradually is made known to us. From Henry Nouwen. I pray that this process is one that you share. Thank you.